So my first question is, why now? Why do another book on the death penalty?
Well, you have to go back a little ways. In about, I think, 2005, I met a remarkable woman named Laura Anderson. Laura had served as a spiritual advisor to the second-to-last juvenile offender executed in Virginia. He was 17 when he committed the murders. His name was Douglas Christopher Thomas, and he was executed as an adult. And while it's interesting to meet anyone who serves as a spiritual advisor who witnessed his execution, what made Laura's story really unique was she had also been his high school English teacher. And so here she was, a teacher of the young man in ninth grade, and then was the last person to kiss him goodbye after they strapped him down the gurney several years later. I met Laura, and we wrote a book together. And so that's the first death penalty book. And in writing that first book, I met a woman named Marie Deans, who was a former death penalty activist, who had worked on Chris's case. She had worked as a mitigation specialist. And I interviewed Marie up in Charlottesville for the purpose of the book, and sort of fell in love with her, and found out that Marie was trying to write her own story about her work in Virginia, but she was in poor health. Like many activists, she never made much money, never had health insurance, had lived on a diet of red beans and rice, nicotine and caffeine, and it caught up with her. But the stress of her job had caught up with her, and she was fading away. And so I wanted to help her write her book. She passed before we could do that. And then this student of mine, her name's Maggie Anderson, and I took up sort of the reins and decided that we would finish the book as a tribute to Marie. And you ask why now? I mean, it took 7 years. And so I think that the book is timely now because this country seems to be really reexamining the utility, the morality of the death penalty. But the timing right now has to do with the fact that it took us 7 years to put together a really complicated book.
And we've had two death penalties this year, right?
Yes. Yeah. Ivan, I'm blanking his last name.
Telegoos.
Ivan Telegoos, who, the death penalty was stayed at the last second, and of course, William Morva. And, you know, William Morva is a case which really would have saddened Marie, the subject of the book, because she would have thought, and I think, that William Morva was not competent to be executed, and I think should not have been executed.
So she's always been against the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
How would you explain why she was so passionate about getting rid of the death penalty?
It's a great question. In the early 1970s, Marie's mother-in-law was brutally murdered by an escaped convict. He had escaped from Maine, come down to South Carolina, tracked Marie's mother-in-law, her name was Penny, home, and then murdered her. And the night of the murders, the police reassured Marie, "Don't worry, we'll fry the bastard." And Marie was utterly horrified, and so was her husband. They thought that you didn't kill to show that killing was wrong, and they did not want the blood on their hands. And so they fought and urged and eventually convinced the local prosecutor not to seek capital murder charges. Once Marie went through that experience, she sort of read everything she could on the death penalty, got involved with Amnesty International, and then in the early 1980s, was asked to speak to an inmate on South Carolina's death row. His name was J.C. Shaw, and he was what we call a death penalty volunteer. He had given up his appeals and wanted to die. And Marie went to, at the behest of the warden, went to South Carolina's death row, met with J.C., worked with him, eventually convinced him to fight. And before she knew it, she was working with all the men on South Carolina's death row. It sounds astonishing given security today, but Marie used to go to South Carolina's death row. She'd go into the chapel. All the men on death row would be brought in. They'd be unchained and unshackled, and the guards would leave, Marie insisted, and she'd sit by herself in the chapel on South Carolina's death row and talk with the men. And she would later say she felt safer there than she felt out in the street. So Marie started down in South Carolina, and her purpose was to keep the men from being executed. And if she couldn't do that, to be a lifeline, to be a friendly face to these men, to be a support system. So that started in South Carolina. And then in 1982, Virginia executed its first inmate in the modern death penalty history. His name was Frank Coppola. He was a former police officer. He was a death penalty volunteer. And a minister from Tennessee, his name was Joe Engel, came up, attended the execution, and was so appalled at what he saw that he convinced Marie to move up to Richmond. And in 1983, she opened up an organization called the Virginia Coalition on Jails and Prisons and started working with the men. So it was her mother-in-law's own murder, which might cause some people to sort of embrace the death penalty, that caused Marie to start fighting capital murder.
So After her death, did you feel like you had to do this book because yes. it had to get out there?
Yeah, Marie was an unsung hero. Marie never sought the spotlight and never sort of received the spotlight. And part of it was I wanted to tell her story, and I wanted to honor her sacrifice by sharing her story with a wide audience. But there's another reason. So Marie felt like these stories needed to be told. That, for example, when they got ready to tear down the old death house in downtown Richmond, Marie said they should keep it up, just like they kept up Dachau, as a cautionary tale, as a warning about bad choices citizens make. And I think Marie's is a cautionary tale. Here's someone who gave her last full measure. It destroyed her health, and she was in the death house with 34 men. She watched them walk into the death chamber and die, and it shortened her life. I think Marie is much a victim of the death penalty in Virginia as the men who were executed. And it's a cautionary tale about a time in Virginia where our death row was bulging at the seams. We seemed to be in a race to execute these men, and we were ignoring things like mental illness, mental handicap, and we were providing these men with unqualified attorneys. We were trying to short-circuit their appeals with things like the 21-day rule. And more than honoring Marie, I think Marie wanted her story to be sort of a warning that even as we're sort of moving away from the death penalty, here's the price we paid, and let's not go back. I mean, one of the things that Marie did, which was so astonishing, was the different hats she wore. So she came to Virginia in 83 to find lawyers for men on death row who had no lawyers and were facing execution dates. And that was a full-time struggle. But then she befriended the men and became, for want of a better phrase, their spiritual advisors. She filed lawsuits to improve prison conditions. She became what's called a mitigation specialist, which someone who presents evidence in sentencing hearings or an appeal for why the men shouldn't be killed. Also, she was counseling the members of the execution team. There was a head of the execution team who considered himself a Christian, and he decided that his Christian faith was incompatible with being the head of the team. And he came to Marie and said, I'm going to quit. And Marie said, no, you're not. She said, if I have to be here, you have to be here. And you have to be here because you're a good person and you're not going to brutalize these men on their way to the death chamber. So here's someone who believes every fiber of her body screams out against the death penalty. And she's serving as an amateur psychologist to the men of the execution team who are having a hard time carrying out their duties. That's what's so remarkable about Marie is I don't know how she did it all. She formed a national organization called Murder Victims Families for Reconciliation that provided a safe space for family members to go to of murder victims to talk about how they didn't want the murderers killed in their name. So one, because she's a remarkable woman, I wanted to tell the story and I wanted to share her story. And two, I wanted her story to be part of the ongoing debate about whether the death penalty has any place in the 21st century.
What do you think Marie would say about the death penalty today if she was alive?
I think that one of Marie's messages, one of her challenges to citizens of Virginia is to educate yourself about the death penalty. That if you support the death penalty, think why and take those reasons and challenge yourself to see if those reasons hold up under scrutiny. We hide the death penalty away. We do it and cover a darkness behind closed doors. And I think she would urge people, as citizens, to take a harder look. A couple of years ago, maybe more than that, two decades ago, there was a death row inmate in Virginia named Timothy Bunch, a former soldier who was charged with capital murder. Shortly before his death, he petitioned the court to have his execution televised because he thought it was important for citizens to see what they were supporting. And the Virginia AG's office, et cetera, fought it tooth and nail. And ultimately, his request to have his execution televised was denied. Why? If we think the death penalty deters, why not open up the doors to the death house and let people observe on television?